right point of view. You're tuned in to the right place. You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Now, the second guest speaker today is Mike Whitby of British Voice, who will tell us a bit about British Voice. Because I know nothing about it.
Thanks, Keith.
Well, I hope I don't upset anybody with some of the things I've got in here, but we'll see. What I'd like to talk about, thanks for inviting me to speak, first of all. Nationalism is naturalism, you know, and we must use the natural law to protect our people, and I'll explain why in a sec. I'm going to mention some things. I'm going to rattle through a few things that perhaps you may not have heard of. And some years back, some of us got involved with a constitutional group as well as being in the BNP. Not in the BNP anymore, but, you know, lots of us left for reasons we all know in this room. But it's this constitutional organisation introduced us to many, many thousands of people. Coincidentally, majority of them think like we do. And that back then, 10 years ago, there were 70,000 people in that movement. So we started getting involved in it, not just to influence them to come into nationalism, but also to find out what they were doing. And we found that they were doing all sorts of things that I personally wasn't aware of. And I thought, well, this is good, and this is good. Things I'd never heard of in the BNP, all due respect to the BNP, within the national movement. The only thing on the list that I can think of that I'd heard through this movement was the monetary system. And then it wasn't talked about very much. They were screaming it from the rooftops. And they were screaming who the people were behind it as well. And we're not allowed to mention those people, of course. But we all know who they are. But when you look at, you know, what's naturalism? The survival of our extended family and friends with a sense of happiness and belonging. Clean air, water, healthy food without any poisons. Warm air, a warm home, a happy family. Preserving our land and culture is safety and security. Honesty and neighbourliness to ensure friendship and mutual protection. Our home is our castle, and this country is our home. I'll expand on that in a minute. Educational development and entertainment, to earn a living and pay our way. And as long as we don't cause any harm, injury or loss to any other person, then we are operating within the law of the land. Now, this is an important thing I want to get across, because, as Julie mentioned, over the past year, we've had a lot of our people, particularly some very, very bright youngsters, you know, the new blood, as it were, of the nationalist movement. They've been earmarked for prison. Because why? The enemy can see that these people are young. It's the new generation of the nationalist movement. They're mostly very clever people. And they understand a lot of stuff that, frankly, you know, some of the older generation outside have not even read about. And they were exposing these things. And that's why they were put in prison. Now, what I'd like to see us doing is operating using the common law. And to explain what I mean by that, the common law is the law of the land. And we've all heard the expression, the law of the land. And I always thought, oh, well, that means, you know, whatever happens to be the law at that particular time, you know, with common law and legislation. But it's not. The law of the land is the law that has existed for thousands of years. The God-given law that we all used for many, many millennia in this country. You know, and this country is, we're the oldest. I choose these days to use the scientific term, anthropological term, of Caucasoid, because there's actually only three races of people on the planet. And some people say, well, it might be five or six, but essentially there's only three. There's Caucasoid people, who are white Europeans. There are Mongoloids, who are essentially Asians. And there are Negroids, who are Africans. Now, the skeletal system, the cranium, the DNA, and everything about each of those three different types are completely different. Nobody can pretend, no Caucasoid can pretend to be a Negroid, because he isn't. And none of those Negroids and Mongoloids can pretend to be Caucasoid. It's not just the colour of our skin, it's everything about us. It's our heritage. We in this island, these islands, and again I've only discovered this in recent years, our heritage goes back, as nations this is, not just as skeletons, 33,000 years. That's over 30,000 years before Jesus was a lad. You know, our people were here. And Professor Brian Sykes of Oxford University wrote a book a few years ago called Blood of the Isles. And he wrote that after conducting a 10-year survey all over Britain, through every corner of Britain, 10,000 people, in pockets everywhere, to analyse their DNA. And he found that, on average, the DNA of the people of Britain has only changed in 12,000 years. It's only changed by 5%. Now, that means we are the same people now as we're here, the same people who were here 12,000 years ago, regardless of all of the so-called invasions. You know, and people might say, oh, well, I'm English, and I'm Welsh, I'm Scottish, I'm Irish. We're the same race of people. We always have been. Yeah, we've fallen out many times, because people do. But we are all Britons. And the name Britain is much, much older than England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. In fact, by 400 years BC, his name just escapes me for now, but a famous Greek philosopher called us the Hyperboreans, because we were known as the Boreans at the time, and he called us the Hyperboreans, us in the north of Britain, that is, and that's people of the north wind. And they revered us, because there were so many wonderful things going on in this country for thousands of years before the Romans came here. And when I was at school, and even still today, kids are taught that nothing really happened in Britain until the Romans came. We didn't have any roads, did we? And we lived in mud huts. Completely wrong. We had the best Druid school in the world. There were 60 Druid schools right throughout Europe. And these were special people. And, you know, the modern day myth is that, oh, the Druids were evil people. They weren't. You know, that was the religion of the day. And they chose the leader. And we had a Pendragon system in this country, which is a king of kings. Throughout the nations of Britain, they were all, the head of it was the dragon. And the Pendragon was the king of kings. And that same rule went right through the known world at the time, many thousands of years ago. Our road systems were made 8,000 years ago by officers of the king, being sent out to certain parts of the country to plot the straightest route. There's an old, very old book called The All Straight Track. You might want to have a read of it. And it's from about 1880 or something like that. And he points out in that book that all these roads that the Romans were supposed to have built were only widened by the Romans. Mm-hmm. Our people had built them thousands of years ago. The reason being that they wanted to give the people the straightest, easiest route to get to the beacons, because they went to the beacons whenever there was danger afoot, and to the holy places, and the nearest market. So these people would come out with, if you like, an ancient theodolite, what they called a long staff, which was, you know, as long as they could, is made to go half a mile in that direction, and then they'd plot the best route, and then they'd create the road, which typically was 8 foot wide, and they'd add salt on it, and then they put limestone over the top. Why would they do that? Because the moon reflecting off it meant it was floodlit. This is 8,000 years ago in this country. You know, floodlit so that whenever they're heading for the beacons, they can see that light, that pathway going all the way up to the beacon. So, this is our heritage. And if you look at 33,000 years, in terms of numbers of generations, just say 25 years as a generation, that's 1,320 generations of our people, our blood, on these isles. And imagine if you had a home, imagine you've got a family home, not many of us have these days, where it's been passed down from, you know, father to son and what have you. But imagine you had one just these days, just for like, say, three or four generations. That would be rare. But if you had one for 1,320 generations, that would certainly be your home without any question at all. I think everyone would agree with that.
Yep.
Well, this country is our home. It's been ours for 33,000 years. Why should we just volunteer to allow other people to come into our home and sit at our table?
Yeah.
And take all the value that our parents and our forefathers have bled and died for? We're not going to do that. So when I say we need to use the law, what we need to use is the common law, which I'll just explain briefly. That I don't know whether you know, but any piece of legislation, any legislative act which contravenes our common law, law of the land, is bad law, and it requires the consent of the people to make it law. Now, it's a fact. Whether we believe it or not, it's a fact. And the powers that be know this. Lots of eminent peers, Lord peers, over the last 400 or 500 years have said this many, many times. And it's part of our constitutional and common law. That if it's against, if any legislation is against it, we can just say, sorry, I don't consent to that. You don't have to say sorry, but we're a polite nation, you know. So what I'm saying here is, when we are approached, now our movement, I'll just explain first of all, our movement, we're very law-abiding. And we want to be upholding not the establishment as such, but the honour of our country. And we're loath to fall out with the establishment and the police and what have you. But they're setting traps for us, left, right and centre. They just come on, they introduce some poxy piece of legislation that says you can't talk about all those immigrants that are coming in. 600,000 every single year on average for the last 21 years. Every single year, more than 600,000 people coming in. People out there don't know that. That's the population of Glasgow every single year. Now, if we're not allowed to talk about that, if they want to silence us, what is it they're afraid of? They're afraid of the general public hearing the truth. Because they never talk about the real immigration figures. They only talk about net migration. And that's a question of those Brits who are absolutely sick of the situation, have decided to go somewhere else, less those who've come in. The truth is, 600,000 every year is one of the biggest cities, population of the biggest cities in this country. We need to be shouting it from the rooftops. But what they do is they come along and say, oh, you've just said something that you're not allowed to say. Oh, sorry, but under our constitutional and common law, we have something called free speech. Now, you might say, well, it's easy to say that, but they can still nick you. So imagine we're out there campaigning. You might be handing leaflets out or whatever. You might be walking down the road with a banner. A policeman comes up to you and speaks to you. He may say, excuse me, can you give me your name? He might say, what are you doing here? You can see what you're doing. He's looking for a reason to nick you. And what I'm talking about here is far too many of our people, particularly the youngsters, have fallen into this trap. You know, all those people that I mentioned in the constitutional movement, they know this very well. They don't know anything, oddly, about nationalism. But they know how to deal with those people. They know that you only have to say, I don't consent. What's your name? I don't consent. What do you mean you don't consent? I don't consent. You can get into a conversation with them if you want to, but you're going to struggle. And the reason for this is, as soon as you give your name, you're consenting to them to arrest you, to put you in prison, to go and raid your home and steal your computers and your telephones and upset your family. If you don't consent, if you don't give your name and you don't consent, whatever they decide to do to you, it's unlawful. If they arrest you, they've arrested you unlawfully. And they, if they haven't got a name, they can't take your fingerprints, your DNA, and your photograph, because they've got no name to ascribe it to. And you might say, well, your wallet's in your pocket. It doesn't matter. I've been arrested about 6 times. And there's only one occasion where I actually gave them my name, and that was reluctantly, because it was the one time I got a party so-called solicitor to represent me, and that was the worst case, the worst thing I could ever have done. So, you know, I think people need to understand the common law. The less information you give them, the less power you give them to over you. So it's very, very important, because we can effectively, I mean, we're not going out to break the law, and we're not causing anybody any harm. We're just spreading the truth. We're evangelists for the truth, if you like, and that's what we've got to be, and we can't allow anybody to shut us off. But we need to keep our people on the streets, free, not behind bars. There's no glory in going to prison. Oh, you know, it's a badge of honour. No, it isn't. They've just shut quiet and silenced another one of our people. So yeah, I mean, I'll rattle those that list off that I mentioned before. 33,000 year history, Magna Carta's our constitutional and common law, the history of our indigenous heritage, the protection of our progeny and the future generations of white people, white children in particular, the United Nations Declaration on the Protection of Indigenous Peoples. Yes. Not many people know that. It's called UNDRIP. Did you know that we're the second longest indigenous peoples in the world? The only ones who are ahead of us are the Aborigines. Now, even the Maoris, like, we've been here 30 times longer. The American Indians, we've been here about 4 times longer. Mm-hmm. And we're not recognised as indigenous peoples. I've written to the United Nations 4 times now. 2 of those letters have been by guaranteed next day delivery, and they don't reply. But they don't have to, because we know that what they're up to. The fact that we know these things, we can just invoke them ourselves. We don't need anybody's permission. And if anyone's going to be protected under the indigenous protection thing, it's going to be our people. Sod these incomers who pretend to be English, Welsh, Scottish, Irish, when they come from blinking Africa or Asia or somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're never going to be, not in a million years. So, you know, forget about it. So anyway, we've got evil GM crops and aspartame and monosodium glutamate, 2 of the deadliest poisons in food additives, and people generally are unaware of it. We need a hard Brexit, as we all know. There's also something else called the United Nations Project Cloverleaf. Chemical trails. People call it chemtrails or geoengineering. 10 years ago, the government were denying it was taking place. It's been happening for 25 years now. But now they call it geoengineering. It's all part of the United Nations Project Cloverleaf. And it's to kill us off. Because over the past 3 years, the death rate, the mortality rate, has dropped significantly compared to the previous 10. And, you know, everyone you know is getting bad chests and what have you. We have harp machines, which, you know, have weaponized the weather. Creation of money. We've got fractional reserve banking, usury, and the national debt. All a fallacy. I think everyone in this room knows the truth about that, but the people generally don't know it. Mortgage and loan scams by banksters with the full complicity of government. There's something called accepted for value, which is how the utility companies get paid for twice for every bill. TV licenses, council tax, personal debt, bailiffs, fracking, family trusts, etc. There's ways out of all sorts of things that our people are having problems. There's more indigenous people homeless in this country than there's ever been before. And most of them, in most cases, it is not their fault. They're not slobs who've been on the dole all of their life, you know, because those people, they get looked after anyway. These are decent people who are homeless. Admiralty law and our enslavement. the legal fiction and the Seteke Trust, all of these things are set in place to keep us there. We need to find out about them. Right, I've quite a few things there, but I'll just wind up because I'm very, very short of time. We need to understand that all of these things there, those people that are mentioned, don't know anything about nationalism, but they do know about all of those things I've mentioned there. Now, we need to get involved with those people, bring them into our movement, and let's have a cohesive action so that not only the whole nationalist movement, but they all regard themselves as patriots. And they were, and I know loads of them. They're decent people. They just don't know what nationalism is. Mm. Anyway, folks, thanks very much for listening.